So I will give the teachings. Probably in Denver, I told my students, I don't know how many years this is going to take, but it's a different here. Not a lot of you have studied Tibetan Buddhism. Therefore, it won't take that long. And some of you have been watching and listening the teachings which I gave in Denver, and the teaching can be really different here and in Denver. So, I'm really happy you all participated for this amazing teachings. This is one of the only teachings can really help us to develop compassion, loving kindness. And if you know what bodhicitta is. And this is the only teaching can really help us to know how to tame our ego and self-attachment. And this is the only teaching that help us to know how to be skillful with others and how to communicate with others and how to work with others. This teaching is not just a Buddhist thing. Every single people need this teaching, need to study well with Bodhisattva. We build that ego and we feed that ego what we have. Of course, based on our self-attachment. And on top of that, some of us have been practicing Dharma for maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, even more. And we build another ego top of the original ego. We build a Dharma ego. And we build a Dharma identity. I have seen so many Western Buddhists build that Dharma identity. It's another layer. It's like a shield, another shield. Why? So many Dharma practitioners are building that. So many religious people are building that. Because we lack compassion, lack loving kindness, lack bodhicitta. Because we have not really put a lot of attention on a text like this, Reverend Bodhisattva. Some spiritual leaders, for example, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, you cannot see almost his ego. And he's always that happy state and compassionate, always. Always loving for others. Always caring for others. Why? Because of this text, Reverend Bodhisattva. He did not just read this text and studied this text. He really mingled his mind with the meaning of Reverend Bodhisattva. So, I don't think this is a text that only Western Buddhists or Buddhists can benefit from. This text can benefit every single person. If you believe in spirituality, if you believe in Dharma and believe path of Dharma and path of Buddha Dharma, of course this text will transform you. But even if you're a person who do not believe in enlightenment or Buddha, or next lifetime. If you are a person who really wants to succeed in this lifetime, still, this text will benefit you. So that's the thing. This book is so important. And since I came to the West, I have been working on Web Bodhisattva teachings. And I taught Web Bodhisattva right after I went to US. And it was too soon, I guess. People thought it was so intense. It is a little bit intense. Because you have to work with your ego. You need to push down your ego. Otherwise, you cannot generate that pure compassion, loving kindness. Otherwise, you cannot really, truly help others. But the more you push your ego down,
the easier
for you to help others and practice bodhicitta, compassion, loving kindness. So I did teach whole Web Bodhisattva a couple years ago. And the people came, but people were not that enthusiastic about Web Bodhisattva. But I have been in North America for almost 8 years. I have been watching people who put a lot of the energy on Web Bodhisattva practice and teaching. Their spiritual practice is improving so fast. And the people who really work on Web Bodhisattva, their personality and everything is transforming. And their family relationship is improving. And their work relationship is improving. And Sangha relationship is improving. And everything is really transforming. But people who really push the Way of Bodhisattva teachings away, it's always like charcoal is always black. And they cannot really have a huge change based on spiritual practice. So this is the experience which I have, and also which I have seen so many Dharma people in Tibet, China, Southeast Asia, and India, who put a lot of energy on one way of Bodhisattva practice. Their personality, their warmth, their energy is so pleasant and so easy. So I encourage you, try to generate some positive motivations and to think, I'm going to study and listening this teachings, and I'm going to read this teachings. This teaching and this practice, this study will benefit others and will benefit myself or you. Yeah. Try to generate positive motivations. And also, listening the teachings, contemplating on the teachings, and meditate on the teaching. Those three things are so important. So we're trying to study, and you guys are going to listen to the teachings while you're listening to the teachings. Try to not let your mind, your physical body is here, but mind is all over the world. Your mind is in David's yoga studio right now, but maybe your mind is all over him. So that won't help. So try to focus. That's the request. And then try to really take one teaching weekly this evening. One really useful. One teaching that you feel, oh, okay, I need this piece. And also be honest with yourself. Which part of your personality have some needs work? Maybe you have weakness about anger, resentment, jealousy, and so many other things. So you're the person who knows your own mind. Your mind and your personality is not hidden from you. Be honest. And check. Don't be selfish. Don't try to be so protective. Oh no, this is who I am. I cannot give this identity up. I cannot give up this identity because this is who I am. Since so many lifetimes, if you believe past life, we have had this. And even if you don't believe past lives, but if you believe this lifetime, since we were born, okay, came out of your mother's womb, we were screaming because of this identity thing. And then we have been building that and making it thicker and making it harder. So if you cannot let go of that identity, this teaching cannot go in. That identity, if you just have that shield of identity and the ego self-attachment, this teaching cannot go in. Really, it can't. But if you just let yourself be a little bit relaxed and not really attached to that who I am, then easy to make a small change. Okay. So I think that's maybe what I wanted to say. And then I'm going to start give teachings in Tibetan. And it's cool, yeah.
Semah pasi adegan, ngarum sokin jikstein ga pawa dan pamu,
We call them afflictive emotions, because they destroy our peace of mind. So they're afflictive, they're not just emotions. And according to the Tibetan teachings, there are 84,000 enumerations of afflictive emotions, basically meaning that we can react in so many different ways. And all of these have to be purified or abandoned in order to attain the state of Buddhahood. A Buddha has abandoned all of these different enumerations of afflictive emotions. And how is it that we actually purify the heart and mind? Well, we do so by taking up the path of Dharma, and especially this Bodhisattva path. So that word way is referring to how we do it, right? It's the method. How do we actually go about purifying? We do it through this way or this method. And then second, the quality of perfection. So that's the second part of the compound word, chup. What are we purifying? Well, Rinpoche said, when all of the afflictive emotions have been purified by taking up the path, the sun of wisdom is able to shine. When that wisdom radiates forth from the mind, we call that perfection. And that has, we could describe this perfection of mind by saying there is nothing in our ordinary world that's not known. So everything is thoroughly known. There is nothing which is not understood. So being able to connect with or work with any situation and any being. And there is nothing which is not realized. So ultimately, nature of wisdom or the nature of mind is completely realized. And then going on back to the word way, we're taking up a path that enables us to completely purify and to completely perfect the mind. And we call that path the six paramitas. Paramita is a Sanskrit word that is a word going to the other side of the ocean or transcending. So these are transcendental qualities that we learn to practice. And Rinpoche said in order to actually work with this path, we have to study them. We have to learn how to take up these qualities. And not only study them intellectually, but we need to learn how to personally embody them and bring them into our daily lives. Then we're coming back to the third word of Bodhisattva, which is Sempa. That is the word which is describing a heroic quality. And when we think of the word hero in a worldly sense, we think of a person who is strong enough to subdue an enemy. But a Bodhisattva is even more heroic than that, because a Bodhisattva is someone whose mind is endlessly courageous, who is never defeated by disappointment. And so Rinpoche said, no matter how difficult the task is, no matter how hard it is to work for the benefit of another, one never feels self-defeated. No matter how many kalpas one has to remain in samsara in order to benefit beings, one is not defeated by self-attachment, and one is fearless of facing all of that time in samsara. And even if one is only working for the benefit of one being and has to undergo great hardship to benefit that one being, no matter how much difficulty there is no lack of courage and no self-defeat. So this quality of heroism in a bodhisattva is very powerful. And Rinpoche said, it is when we take up activity endowed with this kind of courage that we attain enlightenment. So generally speaking, then, bodhisattva conduct is taking up the activity of the six paramitas, which we're going to go through in turn in the text, but beginning with generosity and then ending with wisdom, and doing it endowed with fearless courage. Additionally, so this is a, also sort of speaking to the quality of bodhicitta, but we're not worried about ourselves. We're not focusing on doing things for ourselves. We understand that by helping others, we also are helping ourselves. So we call this book, The Way of the Bodhisattva, a guidebook teaching the conduct of the six paramitas. It explains everything point by point. And then Rinpoche wanted to give a little bit of information about the commentary that he's using. So in a Tibetan text, this is called root text, and it's very old. And then more contemporary masters will write another book kind of talking about how you practice it. And so the commentary for this root text was given by Kenpo Shenga. And this was the teacher of the teacher of our group teacher. He was a very realized sacred master, a great scholar, and all of his students focused on this text, so Bodhisattva conduct was a main part of his lineage teachings. And then we should also take a moment to reflect on how rare it is to receive these teachings here in Ottawa. Rinpoche said he's not sure if anybody has ever in Ottawa taught these teachings from beginning to end, but in America, it's very rare. And in fact, there's 80 or 90 people studying this text with us now in Denver. And Rinpoche asked who's received teachings on this text from beginning to end, and there was one person who sort of raised their hand. They weren't really sure if they had received teachings on everything. So we should feel this is a really auspicious thing for to be happening here. And there's been great and auspicious dependent arising, which supports our study.
Shang
주원도 평창에 유바타도 평창에 단 유바타 써야 돼 강아지가 됐어요 이게 단지다 치는 거죠 이렇게 로르기 때문에 몽고 로그는 옛날에 로르기 때 대체 지금 로나 콩 나름 잘 기술로 강나 유비 값스 아 대지지 레로 양천 봐. 아 칼라벤 먹어 자고 엄칸 근데 쇼던 캔사도 용한 게 강사 특이 인사 근데 내 그때라 공속기 때문에 니마를 했더니 반드다 저기 리무 쉐는 도대 로란 도로 도대 로란 도니에 간에 깝라 헤프투 미츠마기 때문에 다 이주바라기 Niskabla Tepsum, Saint Juada, taking long over that Titani, some market, Kung, Yalyatan, Zayatan, Tani, they must also get a kind of market meaning in Shana, some a game on the shorten. Then you conky, whom of Shun, Saria, taking a lobby of Shun, Mataria, Jalopay, Song. Then meet some ago, Kanki, Shun, Mataria, Jalop, not a kind of game on the inside, then Shun, Mataria, Jalop, then is Juada, good Junior, Song. तने ती क्वालिटी से ना जुवा लाते जामे यों की चीज़ ज़ोंग भी काम होती है ना सर तेरा वो चीज़ की तने ता तंजू ने जामे यों ने तेरे क्या उधर दी बात क्या मैं तेरे
So we're just turning to the very beginning of the root text, and the introductory verses are basically sort of traditional. And they're given to pay respect to those beings who have come before and taught and practiced, and also to avoid obstacles in the composition of the text. One thing Rinpoche wanted to mention is it's actually not on this cover of the root text I have, but almost always the Sanskrit title of the text will be given first. And Rinpoche just wanted to mention something about that. There's a reason that Sanskrit is used in the beginning of the text, even before we translate the title, which is that Sanskrit is a very sacred language. And it is said that even just by reading sacred words like that, that we obtain a habitual, like a karmic connection with the language, so that in the future, we're able to use that language even in our own bodhisattva activity, thinking forward to when we accomplish the path. And another reason that it's done is to remember the kindness of translators who work so hard to bring texts into our own language, just that we can often take for granted all of the work that's done to make things available for us. And then the very first line of the root text says, homage to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And this is Kenpo Shenga. He's making an homage. And he's invoking the blessing of the wisdom master. So we should understand that this text is blessed and infused with the blessings of the tradition. And also praying that no obstacles will come. And then Rinpoche said, what's the difference between a Buddha and a Bodhisattva? Well, a Buddha is actually embodying that same word enlightenment that we just talked about, Changchu. The word for Buddha in Tibetan language is Sangye, and it has basically the same meaning. It means like vast purification, complete purification or perfection. And then a Bodhisattva is said to be an heir of the Buddha or a follower of the Buddha, and we could qualify that as two different types. An ordinary bodhisattva is like we are. They're a beginner, and they're making effort at the bodhisattva path. They're relying on teachings and guidance to constantly be increasing their ability to practice. And then there are noble bodhisattvas, and that word noble is referring to the fact that they've reached at least the first bhumi. So that's a level of realization. It's called the first bhumi, but it's actually a very high level of realization because one has already seen emptiness directly at that point. So the afflictive emotions, all of the coarse afflictive emotions are abandoned already. So even though we're saying the first theme, these are very realized themes. And then in the first verse, I'm just going to read the verses when Rinpoche recites them. It says, to those who go in bliss, the Dharmakaya they possess, and all their heirs, to all those worthy of respect, I reverently bow. According to the scriptures, I shall now in brief describe the practice of bodhisattva discipline. And here, in this verse, he's also paying respect to Shantideva, as well as all of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and those worthy of respect. And that gives us the chance to mention who Shantideva was. And Shantideva is the author of this root text. He was a very great pandita, or a great scholar. And Rinpoche just told you, said a little bit about his life. So Shantideva was actually born into a royal family, and he was going to become king. But sort of on the eve of when he was supposed to become king, he had a dream that on his throne, Manjushri, who is an embodiment of omniscience, so Buddha, was sitting on his throne. And when he woke up, he thought to himself, I can't sit on the king's throne because that's Manjushri's throne. So that's a sign I shouldn't become a king, and I should abandon my status. And so he left, he abandoned his heirship to the throne, and he went to Nalanda University, which is a great Buddhist university at the time. But when he was there, he was very unusual. So most of the scholars and the monks were really, they led a really disciplined life, but he was so lazy, and he ate all the time, and he slept all the time, and people thought he didn't know anything at all. And nobody realized that he had this connection with Manjushri. That was kind of a secret. And there was a tradition where each day, there was a scholar who would come up, and they would recite a sutra, they would give a teaching. And when it was his turn, everybody was making fun of him because they thought he didn't know anything. And he seemed like he didn't know anything. And so when he got up on the throne, he said, should I give a teaching that you've all heard before, or should I teach something that no one's ever heard before? And so they were, again, making fun of him, and they said, yeah, you should teach something we've never heard before, because they thought that would be hilarious and embarrassing for him. But instead, he gave this teaching, and he taught the way of the Bodhisattva, and it was a direct expression of Manjushri's mind. So this teaching that we read here in verse form was given by Shantideva on the throne. Mm-hmm.
Marum Rabola, Hanya Chitre Marto Sigurva, Mam Kiba in Yakam.
nyanga lamke ba yin ya tang devjo lamke ba yin ya tang te da bo ke ngar mu sir tri ya ke che de ni tan ji de sa la na no so rang yil la kom shir ne de sam so ne ngar mu yil la shang chi ke sem de kom ya ki do ya ke che de ni shang chi ke sem pi kyo pa la ju ba de sam de yin so ne je ba ta so ne ta ti mu ne tong ne Shanchip Senpi Lam Tela Hama Kwe Chiyo Mara Goma Tsuya Chiyo Mara Chumtha Rabo Mare Yenaya Kumya De Sao Chiyo Mara Kumya Ke Cheta Shanchip Ke Senki Sungchu Lenya De Sao Chiyo Mara Shanchip Ke Senki Shyopa Lan Jyupi Te Pologya De Sao Chiyo Mara Te Ti Stokta Vijitla Vijarni Nyams Lenya De Sao Chiyo Mara
And then Rinpoche just mentioned commentary on a couple more things. In that first line of that first verse, it mentions the Dharmakaya, those who have gone, those who go and list the Dharmakaya they possessed. And Rinpoche wanted to say something about that word. The Dharmakaya there is referring to twofold omniscience. So when we're paying homage, sometimes it's hard for us to actually think about what does the quality of wisdom mean when we have this sort of ordinary idea about it. But twofold omniscience refers to the fact that this is a being who thoroughly knows everything in our ordinary world and then also has perfect realization of everything transcendental. So that's sort of, it's hard to actually wrap your mind about, you know, how vast that understanding is. But when we think about the quality of wisdom, we sort of need to take that word beyond our ordinary understanding. And then it's also referring to a realization of Dharma, which is vast and profound. So also sort of trying to deepen our understanding of what Dharma is, that it's not just this ordinary thing, but it has the ability to make the mind spacious and deep, to bring complete realization. And then, of course, he says he's not only paying homage to these completely realized masters, but then also to bodhisattvas, lamas, lineage holders, all beings who possess wisdom, anyone worthy of respect. And then the next verse says, here I shall say nothing that has not been said before, and the art of prosody I have no skill. I therefore have no thought that this might be of benefit to others. I wrote it only to habituate my mind. He's teaching in order to help us obtain good qualities. But he says himself, I'm not teaching something that's difficult to understand, and I'm not teaching anything that maybe people haven't heard before. But there are probably others like me who haven't clarified their understanding of really how to help other people and how to generate bodhicitta. And so for those people who are just like myself, I'm writing this text, but really I'm just doing this to make myself a better person. And this, Rinpoche breaks up this verse because this is the perfect example for all of us. It's not that we're not capable of understanding how to become a better person. We can all understand this. It's not like philosophy. But the point is that we have to clarify it, and then we have to get used to how we actually go about doing it. We have to read text, we have to study, and then we have to start paying attention to our own behavior. We have to consistently apply the meaning of these teachings to ourselves, which is the difficult part.
Arang tang kham chik pak gansa tso lai pan tok yak che tu nge tan ju le zang song tene tan ju le ke tenda pa la tan ge re ta bo song yo te ke ji la tene ka re se na tan ne la che ta lo to na da ju de lo de ha jang sa wa chi
단절되는 이 같은 데 배기도 도브레케르 와라 카르테 다 판바 모드는 치리야 단절과 칼랑게르 송네 티코로 같이 기 아레 단절스 단절 금리로 같이 되니에 칼카보레 카산 공당에 일라니 페이크 고네니에 디아 탱크 고네니에 디아 칼카보이니 몽고 조송데요레 이나야 마람서 무네 센낭도 코르 삼노직 당나 타타마르선 자발랑라 미 billion That in Nanne, Muni Tanjur to Mudula, Shinyongo then Kanda, Shambatam Yangi Shamsik, Yamni Ship, San Kanda, Mi Yapojicha, San Kanda, Rajan Pandu, San Kanda, Dunsan Dong Wangi Bak Rajan Pandu, San Kanda, Rangi Judy Yagi Dong San Kanda Pansati, Nimok Kanda. Dunsan Tong Mandi Pak Gansa Shamongo Yung Chuba Yen, Namba Yen, Dunsan Tong Mandi Pak and Namba Chi Namba Kishu Yang Tapaju Penji Yoma. They Namba Kishuki Kangan Mare, Gansa Kang. Namba Kishuki Kun Mare, Gansa Kang. Chulu Kanda Yen, Chudong Tapaju Penji Gansa Hajako. In the young, Chudong Tumba Duncan Council, never a bit, never. Chudong Tumba Duncan took some kind of council, never a bit, never. Took some kind of council, you're a future council, and they are pet. They are pet the youth, Mully Rumbo Chin, the Hajum, or Rantum Chamber. Mully Rumbo Chin, the Latin, shall I catch him? Ramajan, when you check the tone, catching with your duke to be a duke to be a listed that your future, there are million of chain, say you. Then moves in your heart and thought. Soon to know, last one. Laguna, Tabby, Jobson, Linda, you know, and Nina, Kurus, Tamando, Linda, you know, get the need of your poor Linda or someone. Madam took a little day. Yapu, which patient she shina? Ramajan, Tam check the tone, the duke. Tara Sanki Toya Lithenium, Stain Della Tenne, Lithen Della Tenne, Jonathan. Minas Cartin Morsum, Lithen the Yopopation Matam, Cova Munta Mebal, Cameron, Lithen the Pala. Marans of the Lake Sapa. Gilded a need of your pudding, said him, and give a gun home for your poem, leaving a good talk here. They lifted the patient of ocean. A dip party or your poem leading a dip tapio. They yelled to Tarans of the listened mixer in, listened random chamber in, listened the latin, shall I get him with dip tapia? Hug on it, listened the chipmazoya, Zoya had it out.
So if you're following in the root text, Gurmashay just said a tiny bit about verse number three, which was basically that, again, the author, the author of the text, the root text, is writing the text not only to strengthen his own faith, but to help others strengthen their faith and to help others see the way to live a virtuous life. So he's basically saying, whatever good that I have, I want to share it all with you. And then in the fourth verse, he begins teaching on the four thoughts that turn the mind. And this is a really essential part of the Buddhist path. And so verse number four is discussing the precious human life. In the last line, he says, how could such a chance be mine again? So referring to this life that we have that is endowed with leisure and supportive conditions, basically meaning that we have the opportunity to practice and we have the support to practice. And Rinpoche said, turn your mind towards yourself and look inward. Reflect on all of the positive things that you have supporting you in your spiritual life and even your ordinary life. There are over 7 billion people on this planet. But how many of those are focused on developing loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta for others. How many of them think that one of their primary goals in life is to be a good person, to help others, to share what they have with others? When you think in this way, those kind of like-minded people are like stars in the daytime sky. They're so rare. But even among Buddhists, there are none who are separate from self-attachment, where our activity, our way of thinking is always corrupted by self-attachment. So when we see others trying to practice the Dharma, trying to be a good person and making a mistake, we should remember this is the problem of individual people. We're all struggling to figure out how to do that. This is not a problem with the Dharma teachings. So even among religious people, there are many people who really want to practice in accordance with their religious tradition. It's just very rare to actually figure out how to do it. Rinpoche said, we should respect everyone who's making that attempt. And reflect on your precious human life on a regular basis. Think of how precious it is that you have a life where you can really benefit others. You can focus on others and you can become a better person. Instead of the body, in the scriptures, knowing how to use it, the body is the support for enlightenment. Using it mistakenly, the body is the support for circling in samsara. The body is the servant of virtue and non-virtue. So that scriptural quotation is referring to the fact that in this human life that we have, we can use our life for really positive things and really negative things. And the body will do whatever the mind tells it to do. So it's really up to us, like, how we invest our energy. In any case, know that it is a valuable life that you have and that it's possible to make changes. And don't waste your time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that will say some sort of thing. Because this human life is so precious. And you all should know that. And we're not going to obtain this kind of precious human life again and again. This is the right moment and really important moment to use this precious human life for good purpose. Remember that. It's so precious. And you are educated and you want to be a compassionate person and you want to learn spiritual practice and you want to take care of others and you want to take care of yourself, then this precious life can really help us to manifest your goals. So don't waste your precious human life. It doesn't matter how young you are, or it doesn't matter how old you are. We all have that precious human life, and we all got that opportunity to use this precious human life. Maybe some of you are in your 50s or 60s, even more. You shouldn't feel, oh, okay, I wasted my precious human life. That's how Western people like to think, and to bring a guilt feeling. Oh my gosh, I really wasted my precious human life for 6 years or 7 years. I have not tried to develop my spiritual practice. Don't always try to cling on past. Whatever you did in the past, it's done. Get over it. Let it go. But the thing is, focus on the present moment. Even you're a person who is 108 years old, you still have chance to use this precious human life. You still can develop your spiritual practice. And you still can develop your compassion and loving kindness practice. You still can be a good person. But some of you are pretty young, in your 20s. I am so young, I still have so many time to develop my spiritual practice. I should enjoy this youth, do drugs, and go to bar, and go to theaters and have a lot of sex and have a lot of boyfriends and girlfriends, you're not really using your youth properly. That pleasure is not real, the ultimate pleasure. You're wasting your life. You're doing drugs. You're hurting yourself. You're drinking a lot. You're hurting yourself. You're partying so much. You're wasting your time. So life is short. Even if you're in your 20s, don't think I have got a lot of time. You have not got a lot of time. So if you don't really use this precious moment, then you're wasting a lot. And you might wandering in that samsaric activity and life. Go back to drugs and then come back and then go back to drugs and then maybe in 30 years later, after 30 years or 40 years later, you finally wake up that can be a little bit too late. So we all got that precious human, no matter how old you are or how young you are. But the thing is, we should use it, especially young people, when you're in your 20s. Your brain is really healthy. Your mind is so sharp. Your physical body is so healthy. And you can do so many things, not just for yourself. You can really do really good things for society, for the family. If you do something like that, you're using this precious human life for a good purpose. And you're not wasting your precious human life. And also, later, as Western people are really attached to the things you have done in the past, like, oh, I did something bad. You won't have that. You won't have that the guilt bring to the future. Because you already did something, start something good, positive, present moment. So I think using this precious human life skillfully is so important. So essential. Well, and then I will go to next verses, but the thing is, if this precious human life is permanent, then we can wait, you know, okay, I have enough time. I will do some good things after 20 years. Right now, I wanted to focus on my own self. We can do that. But this life is so short. We don't know. Right now, North Americans are so lucky. There's no like huge problems happening. For example, earthquake or tsunami or typhoon, things like that. But one day, something is going to happen. So before that, use the precious human life skillfully. Then you take a jilla, that must stop by it, you don't must stop by in the yinayam. Mazat and if Shanchip the same the yam salana, Hadam Tanyun Chimboyan Batam, Shanchip the same Kidna, Hadam Solum Chimboyan Yatam, take it for that it tangled. They are not just some moment after not only better than the song, but certain things I can be killed and then you can go to the dungeon for me and the bottom. If they give a young tongue, yet that the part of Jim Quinton of that they didn't have a chance to send them baggage and good of Jim and Bajer say, show Kamanika guys and your Sena. Marvel to come soon call a day. Nima maybe, Samo Dava maybe, Jerm, Karma maybe. Give up some of the time. Give it, come home. Some of the time. shungchubsem gukkong zong tang, ajantan gukkong zong de zong, kiya haa nyung nyung. Tenda po kiya yang, marung tsu de zi jiga, mungma ka le tang, sanji de shangchub sen pa de tang, sot nam di shun lap tang, tenda po la tenne, shiki tuk yore, kiv yore. Tenda marung tsu sot nam ki, Kengong, kakwa giwa kengong, hati tok chungchung. Yinaya nakwa ma giwa kengong, nyomong ba gyakir kengong, dochak kajila, jirgong, jirgong kajila, dani kondun, kondun kajila, chokdok, chokdok kajila, dani ngar gyakla sokpa, hati tok chungchung. Tete giwa nyamchung dala, dikpar tok chungchung kengong, dabete nir tok chungchung semen, ba gyajan kengong, dhizir chungchung kajitong. Shangchik ke sem de gila ke madar, ardek pa stok chen, perna. Kare, nangasaki la gyabe akam lam, ardek pa stok chen madar. Te zumya ke stok chiko na, te zumya ke chen da hachung zon tari pa misar chiko. Te tong thamba, te labo ardek pa stok chen bo te meba zoya, zirki onan go na, shangchik ke sem, ま、そっちけば。ずっとなんか、まれ、なんか、やじんとずっとなんか。てで、からはたまららこんじゃばい、とわんなんきんでにたんだら、全然さめきぶとなんき、でんちょ、でらにとたらしやったの。わわまんの。ら、しょんちきらんで、にゃんすらん。とばとこさんき、しょんちきせんて、はよんちんの。とっちんとだ。ぬばちんのいんば、ずっね。 Tani jiju ka pshate tola, shangchik kusim de panyon chumbo yinba de tangi wa. Te yinzi tiyachik la, tani shangchik kusim de panyon chumbo yinba.
So if you're following in my root text from Shes giving commentary on the 5th verse and the 6th verse, and I don't have to read every verse, but I love the 5th verse. Just as on a dark night black with clouds, the sun lightning glares and all is clearly shown, likewise, rarely through the Buddha's power, virtuous thoughts rise brief and transient in the world. And the meaning of the fifth and the sixth verse is, first of all, life's impermanence. Rinpoche said, even when we have a virtuous thought, it's so impermanent. Or even when we have the opportunity to do good, it's so impermanent. But also, these verses are showing the great benefit and the great merit of beneficial activity or compassionate activity. Rinpoche was giving some commentary on the dark night black of clouds. When we're in samsara, it's almost like it's so dark, it's a sky without sun, moon, or stars. It's true darkness. And then when we have that fleeting thought, an excellent motivation or the wish to do something good, or real impartial loving kindness and bodhicitta, it's so rare and transient. And we should recognize this is something to be cultivated and something that we have to work at developing. Because the fact that it arose at all is just because of previous good karma that we've accumulated and the blessings of the wisdom beings. The strength of our virtuous motivation, our excellent motivation, is so small. And in comparison to that, our negative motivation or our corrupted motivation is so intense. In fact, it is strengthened by all of the innumerable 84,000 kinds of afflictive emotions, which start out with simple things like anger, resentment, jealousy, arrogance, and then just keep spiraling outward from there. It is said that, or Rinpoche said, we could think of our propensity to act in selfish ways or in ways that harm others is like an atomic bomb. It's so destructive. And also, it's so powerful. What is there that's strong enough to capture the energy of that? What's strong enough to sort of stop that outward rippling effect of that? It is only bodhicitta. It's only this truly impartial compassion, wish to benefit others that can enable us to sort of capture that normal energy that ripples out from us. And then in verse 6, it's talking about great sages who have been practicing for thousands of years, and they saw such great benefit in training in bodhisattva activity. And so Rinpoche was going to speak in English a little bit about the benefits of bodhicitta. So Rinpoche said, one thing that we should know about bodhicitta, if you don't know anything else, is that bodhicitta is something that from the minute that we start cultivating it, it enables us to become happier and happier people. That's just the nature of bodhicitta. But Rinpoche was hoping someone will give some more definition of bodhicitta and maybe help everybody clarify their understanding of that term.
Patrick, can you give us?
To have the wish to
talk louder,
to have the wish to bring all sentient beings to enlightenment, and to apply it, and to act with this wish and do actions towards this.
Okay, so to have the wish to bring all sentient beings to enlightenment, and to act in a way that would carry that out. That's what I heard Patrick say.
Mm-hmm. Tenda bozo gona, tenda bongu ne, yung tapajik chakona, kanda kanda yodan ne bosa.
So in order to be a person who can carry out that kind of activity, then what kind of person do we need to be? It's a question for everybody. What kind of person do you have to become?
I think we have to be filled with empathy and compassion.
Okay.
What about discovering the ultimate reality, or being aware of the ultimate truth within?
What do you mean?
The ultimate truth of reality. So you're not attached to relative truths, and once you discover that within yourself, then it naturally expresses.
But how can we do that? Reach that ultimate?
Mindfulness and practice and teachings.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Maybe like chipping away at the ego and afflictive emotions and self-attachment would be part of how we get there.
Good. Yeah, I needed that answer, right? It's not hard to really explain bodhicitta, because you all educated, you all know how to read English books. You all are book smart, right? It's easy to get the idea, main idea, but it's really hard to actualize the meaning of the teaching. If we wanted to actualize the meaning of a bodhicitta practice and bodhicitta teachings, we really need to apply the teachings in our daily life. We really need to work inwardly, not outwardly. We should not try to normal Western culture. We always think the way I think is the best way. And we always try to change others externally and try to others agree us. But in bodhisattva path, it doesn't work that way. So we need work with our ego. Be mindful, exactly, yeah. Without mindfulness, it's harder. Of course, we have to have empathy. How about your name?
Melody.
Melody. Melody, right, yeah. And we all need that. But even if
we have that toolbox there, full of tools in a box. If we don't use it, we cannot actualize emerging practice. We cannot really transform ourselves as a bodhisattva. So therefore, we need to use each tools to chip down the ego and make ego 10,000 pieces and not keep the ego, those pieces in there, just get rid of them. Then really we will. Make progress and really can generate that impartial compassion, impartial loving kindness, impartial, of course, bodhicitta. So the thing is, we all, for example, Sarah, it's good, it's exactly ultimate. But we always look up to ultimate. There's something we have not experienced somewhere there, and we want to experience that. But if we really want to experience that ultimate bodhicitta, bodhicitta has two parts. I will explain more later. Ultimate bodhicitta, which is the nature of mind, always pure. Stillness. But because of our ego, self-attachment, affective emotions covered that pure aspect of our mind nature. So if we really wanted to see and experience that pure aspect of mind nature, we need to know how to peel those layers, so many layers we have been building on, then we need a method, which is why we got to set up practice and those tools in this teaching, use the teachings and peel the layers, then slowly we will have a glimpse of experience of mind nature or ultimate nature. So right now, a lot of you, I can see, you have no idea what I'm saying or what I'm talking about. But the thing is, we should. The foundation for impartial compassion, impartial loving kindness, and bodhicitta is having an excellent motivation. Okay. So can you tell me what can be excellent motivation?
Yeah, what does that feel like? Or...
Yeah.
Doing things from the heart.
So, for example,
so what does it feel like to have the right motivation?
Yeah, or just describe what it, I mean. I was just trying to help people kind of understand what Rich's question was. However, you want to answer, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
What's the question again?
She said, can you give an example of having an excellent motivation?
Doing things for others, others' well being. So an example could be dedicating the merit of a meditation to all sentient beings.
Okay. And someone?
You could practice on not getting angry with the people that bring harm to you. You can understand with loving kindness and understand their suffering as well. So
okay.
That's a tool.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think the ultimate motivation is definitely is compassion, but also I would say before that is understand the reality of the world, the true nature of the world, which is emptiness, or whatever it is. But I think that's a good motivation, because we want to understand where we are, what we're doing. By understanding that, we can act better.
Okay. Every answer is pretty good. I needed more. Yeah.
We had a little bit of a discussion of this at our last Sangha meeting, and what we wanted to do was this phrase that said, every action you take in your day is for the benefit of all sentient beings. And we were trying to understand, how could we develop that? What would that mean? How would we be able to do that? And one of the examples would be, well, can we, you know, go through a grocery line or park our car or do any of these ordinary activities every day for the benefit of all sentient beings, so that eventually all our activity is infused with that idea and that benefit of everything we do, then it's for the benefit of sentient beings. So that was what we were just asking about, or talking about that as a possibility.
Okay.
Jason?
Can
you say something? What David was saying.
Okay. What, like, really, when we say, like, excellent motivation, it seems simple, right? But really, what makes
it excellent?
Yeah.
For me, like, for a living, I do counseling,
right.
And I try to.
That's why I was asking.
Okay, I come from a place of love, like, so that's why, you know, it might sound weird, but even if I have something going on in my life that could be upsetting for me, I put it aside. I don't focus on myself, and I'm fully present for the person in front of me, and I try to connect with them on a different level. And I have motivation there because I feel like I have an opportunity to help. So that's where my motivation comes from, is I feel like I have an opportunity that I can make a difference. I don't know if that's...
Understanding suffering of beings within samsara, cyclic, generating revulsion, and renunciation. That's
okay. That can be a part. Yeah.
When I hear the word excellent, the what rings for me is that it's without prejudice. The compassion and the longing to relieve the suffering of people isn't restricted to people I like. It's a sense of everybody is deserving of that, and letting go of my own prejudice against some people, or my own revulsion of some people, or whatever, and helping all beings without any prejudice at all, without any preference.
That's pretty good, isn't it? Okay.
Because I still have a lot of ego, I think of starting the exit relationship with myself. So I want to do this for me. And by doing it for me, I can do it. First, I have to clearly, and then while I'm doing that, then I'm truly being the others first.
Okay.
I was going to say something opposite to the theme.
Okay, good.
I think when I have a good motivation, it's to help others. But in my good motivation, there's something for me. There's still some pride, and I'm so proud of myself for doing things for others, and it makes. There's self-attachment in my good motivation. So maybe an excellent motivation would be to help others with no thought of me in there. So I'm not doing it for that nice side effect that it benefits.
Okay, I needed that answer. Okay, so when we do things for others, we always have a help, something in return. Or always have something contaminated by our ego or self-attachment, right? And then we do something for others based on that strong good motivation, maybe not completely pure. Then later, that person treat me differently, and immediately I feel hurt because of my motivation was not pure, and I had that self-attachment. and had a hope and something I will get back because I'm doing this. But if we really have that excellent motivation for others, no matter who that person or who that being is, no matter what that person does to me, nothing changes. I don't have regret. But we do regret if we do not have that excellent motivation. I always haven't been trying to support it and trying to be nice with this person. Now this person is like treating me like a shit. And it's hurt. It's pain. And then that really bothers us. That means, and also almost like your answer, you did have prejudice or some sort of contaminated by ego and self-attachment. I have a really good example for this. It's really important. If we really don't know what excellent motivation is, then we are not going to build that foundation for compassion and loving kindness. In Tibet, when China invaded Tibet, okay, so many Tibetan people psychologically got crazy. And they just took those ideas from Chinese constitution and they really treated Tibetan lamas that way. And those people were so close to Tibetan lamas. But Tibetan lamas were just like an ocean or a really strong mountain. Nothing bothered them. And they said, it's not my fault. But, oh no, it's not their fault. It's just how samsara is. And it, even though they really helped, taught, and for those people, but they never resent towards those people who treated them like badly. Not just verbal, but they really beat up Tibetan lamas. So when we have that excellent motivation, for example, in a sangha, we always understand each other. And then, if we have that excellent motivation towards the community or society, if we do something for others, if we do not get anything back, we're completely fine. That's so important. Build that excellent motivation. When you have that excellent motivation, or you can generate that excellent motivation, then you really have a good foundation to generate compassion. Excellent compassion. Excellent loving kindness. Of course, then excellent bodhicitta. It's so important. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think that we're taught that it's a great sacrifice in our society to give up our own pleasure when really it's making us unhappy. So if we can realize that by giving, by being open and truthful for others, that makes us, that is the cause of our own happiness. We don't, I don't think we have that ignorance or we ignore that because we don't, we're not taught that the real happiness or love or joy is derived from giving oneself. We always think that it's by giving. So we think, oh, I'm trying to be a good girl, I'm going to sacrifice this, when really you're doing something good for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Tedy mám zrovna kipo čaky, ki neka pijutu, te mám zrovna kmošen do desan. Ramki, ramki, gela, ramki mezo kipo, ni pomo da sam tukaj. Ramki mezo kipo de žakevi, šednen ki lega drutu, te njuni kipo ki gure, mi naj mazo de bitu kmošen do desan.
It's a really, really foreign for me.
But exactly, I'm trying to explain what you said, and she's like,
but I really need to understand that, yeah.
I totally agree with what you
it's
said.
It's hard because you don't want to be like, I've never wanted to follow the rules so that I can get something, because they know that that's not why, that's not excellent motivation. Yet, it's hard for us to really understand that deep happiness that you get from being something that we're not taught how to be until you experience it.
So what I heard Sarah saying that was interesting to me, that she was saying that like when we give something up, we're taught that like we in a way we sort of feel bad about it. It's like, yeah, I'm giving that up. And we're sort of taught like, you shouldn't do that. Yeah, you're sacrificing. It's sort of a negative thing. Because you shouldn't keep
giving up what?
Giving up anything, like if you give up anything, like
it's even like sense of bringing hardship, deliberately bringing hardship on yourself because it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. Or giving up drugs, sex, bars, all those things you mentioned earlier, like it's a sacrifice.
Yeah, like because that's what normal people should do to be happy. And you're like giving up that chance.
Because we're Christianity based, so
yeah.
We're like,
yeah,
so
perfect,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
In our culture, the Christian culture,
yeah.
We are taught that good for others is sacrificing something.
Yeah.
In your culture, it is very different. And in our culture, and our ego is based on what we receive from our culture. Our ego is taught to give sacrifice, to sacrifice something for the good of others. This is what we've learned in our Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and our ego is built from our Christian culture. And the ego is very strong in this way, because the culture builds our ego this way. I don't know if that is clear to you. Your ego is not built the same way, and you can in the culture, but the thing is you are taught different things there. It comes with different things. Our culture is really sacrifice, misery. It's very strange. this is what we were taught from.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get rid of that.
Okay, yeah, I think this is something I need to learn more. But I really don't, I cannot think like when I help others, do things for others, it's going to hurt me. I cannot. It makes me happy. It brings a lot of joy.
Yeah. But and we're taught to be attached to things, so mm-hmm.
Right.
That up is suffering.
Right. Good. Good, Sarah. Yeah, it's a good thing to know. And sometimes when people ask the questions about this, I would rather come pull it.
It's confused.
I completely disconnect the question because I have no idea what you're
well,
it's good, Sarah. I know you. Otherwise, I
what?
What is that?
Well, if nobody told you that giving something up was like a quote a sacrifice, we wouldn't have a negative label about it. But we're taught that it's negative.
Yeah.
Because you're giving up something that you shouldn't. You're giving up something you should keep to yourself.
Yeah. Hardship, it has the connotation that doing something that causes yourself hardship like that is a virtuous act. That's considered to be, I should make myself suffer, and that's a virtuous act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's based on the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being crucified,
He gave up his life for our sins.
He suffered for us.
And so then we're taught to sacrifice, try to sacrifice in a similar way.
Yep.
And it creates these problems.
Right. So it's interesting, like the Tibetan Buddhist idea, like bodhicitta, it's just like, you know, everybody, like that joy just spreads. You know, nobody's really suffering. You're doing something good for someone else and you just feel good.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Just to work with that, it comes from the notion of original sin, which is the complete opposite in the Buddhist tradition. We have original goodness.
Right.
And in Christian belief,
we
have original
sin. Okay.
So that's really where it comes from.
And
also, I think, but also, the way Jesus sacrificed for others is exactly bodhisattva.
Yes.
And he did not have self-attachment. He didn't have ego. And I always see Jesus as a bodhisattva.
Absolutely.
100%, I don't have doubt. But the thing is, then why Jesus' action is so pure and so perfect, but why then there's another idea, give something is your sacrifice? Oh, I don't get that part.
Neurosis.
It's earned your way into heaven.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
But I also know, I think of my greatest teacher was my grandmother, and she was very giving and loving.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another woman came into my life, very, so simply just loving and giving. And they were great teachers, very Christian, very Catholic, but beautiful women who gave.
Sure.
And they were joyful.
Sure.
And they were happy. And when I think about, as, you know, examples in my life, people who were truly compassionate, they were the ones that just gave love. That's what they, I always
sure.
say, when I look in the dictionary, what the definition of, I would see my grandmother's face, I would see this Tessie's face. These are beautiful faces of women, many people I've met.
Right.
Where,
sure.
Yeah, so it's here. I think it's everywhere. It's just feeling safe in yourself, that giving is a safe thing to do, and loving is a safe thing to do. And it's safe to give then, and not worry that someone that may not give it back. Because you just feel it anyway. You just feel that.
I get something here.
Okay.
It's when you do something with an expectation, like giving, if you do something without an expectation, you're just giving your love, you're just loving, without expecting anything in return. But when you are expecting something in return, that if you do good, this attachment to the expectation, this is what we've been taught.
Yes.
The attachment to the expectation. A lot in our religion is about attachment to our expectation to be on the path of good. But what you are telling us is that, and what her grandmother did, is that with loving, without that expectation,
mm-hmm.
without that attachment to the expectation, then we are.
Sure. Expectation is always a huge obstacle. When we expect something, then it always causes some difficulties. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, then we are going to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just quickly, in our society, I think, you know, there's this, related to what Nadine was saying, if we don't love ourselves, there's a lot of self-hatred, and my path involved a lot of that, and addiction, and then there's this codependence, right? So when we don't have perfect motivation, it's not coming from the heart, it's from a codependent, dysfunctional place, and we're giving, but there's still, you know, we have to get to know ourselves enough to know that we have an expectation of getting something in return, whether it's love or it's XYZ. And so the path is about opening to coming from the heart, so you're giving from the heart and wanting someone else to have well-being, comfort, acceptance, peace.
So it sounds like that Ingram Shea was talking about mindfulness there, about a mindfulness, like having the mindfulness to know that you have an expectation is a really important part of the extra motivation, getting to know your motivation and what's in there.
Okay. So we will do a sitting meditation.
Mm-hmm.